This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Osama bin Laden is one of thousands of very radical Muslims. It became their mission to defend Afghanistan, but then also to expand.
So let's go to 9/11. You're 14 years old. The event takes place. What's life like with the last name of bin Laden?
Brace yourselves, because your life is never going to be the same again. Watching the news and some politicians saying that, you know, Islam is a religion of peace.
That politician you mentioned is a president.
All of the mainstream media perpetrated that narrative.
I would challenge any journalist, go to Iran and work there for 2 years.
Christian Amanpour should do what you just said.
Have you ever been to Saudi Arabia? You've never been.
And then you have here in the West, you know, Mattel coming out with the veiled Barbie and Nike coming out with the hijab with a swoosh. And apparently you get labeled as a racist if you say these things. But this ideology is a real problem.
Now, let me get this straight. There is someone who is the niece of Osama bin Laden, who is a supporter of Donald Trump.
He was able to bring all these people together at the table to strike peace agreements. He hasn't started any new wars.
Why do you think 80 million Americans voted for Biden?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that number.
You're supposed to hate Trump.
We're supposed to believe that this candidate garnered more votes than Hillary Clinton, than Obama. It smells really bad, Patrick.
This incident in 1933, every Muslim needs to be aware of it. And it is something that is truly shocking to hear.
This is the day.
Greetings and peace. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Deen Show. I'm Eddie, your host. Good to have you back with us. And it's really good to have our special guest, Dr. Kevin, who's with us. I had to bring on an expert, somebody who's a scholar in this area. Not only are you your professor in a university from the Wisconsin University, you taught there for many years in other universities, but you have dwelled into an area also that you became a scholar technically in this area that we're going to be discussing. And what prompted us to discuss this is that something is again being brought to the surface, this topic of 9/11 with the niece that all of a sudden came out of the woodwork. Her name is Osama bin Laden's niece. They're calling her Osama bin Laden's niece, Noor bin Laden. That's interesting, because I was telling you, Dr. Kevin, before I go on, assalamu alaikum, how are you?
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, ya Eddie. It's great to be back on your show. I love your show.
Peace be with you. Good to have you back again.
Yeah, thank you.
So did I hit that right? You were a professor at the University of Wisconsin?
Well, close enough. I was technically a lecturer there, and I think, well, I forget what I was categorized at, Edgewood College of Madison. I was a professor in Milwaukee at Kaplan University, and I've taught at San Francisco State and other places.
Now, just a recap of your story, because you are the quintessential example of someone who is exercising his right to freedom of speech, if I remember that story correctly. And you were just blasted for that.
Right.
Well, you were teaching critical thinking skills.
Yeah, remember how it was after 9/11, Eddie. It was crazy. People were being stampeded into this fear kind of paranoia vibe, sort of like with COVID today, but with a lot less reason, because I do think there really is such a thing as COVID and it's making people sick. But 9/11, that was a complete, what should we call it, a stampeding people into totally unreasonable fear. The chances that you were going to get killed by any kind of terrorist, and most Islamic so-called Islamic terrorists were being blamed for about 2% of the attacks at the time, but the chance you're going to be killed by any kind of terrorist at that time, or really any other time, is comparable to getting hit by lightning twice. So that was a hoax, but everybody was terrified of the scary, scary radical Muslims. And so I looked at this critically and tried to teach critical thinking around it. And then in 2004, I woke up to the fact that the official story of 9/11 was not just false, but obviously and easily provably false. So I started doing activism and teach-ins on that issue that got me in trouble. And then in 2006, I was dragged on Fox News, attacked by politicians, made into a whipping boy for the Professors for 9/11 Truth. And since then, I've been forced to become an independent scholar, and some would call me a professional conspiracy theorist.
Now, just you mentioned that word. We talked about this in previous shows. When this label is thrown out, when did this officially get coined? And when you label someone with this term, does that kind of shut down the conversation? Is that meant to shut down, you know, a credible you know, conversation to just try to ascertain the truth without going down in a dark hole?
Well, of course. That's actually why the term conspiracy theorist was popularized by none other than the CIA. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but it is a true one. The CIA issued a memorandum in 1967 to its assets in the media. And the CIA has a lot of assets in the media. You can Google the term Operation Mockingbird for some of that evidence. So the CIA put out a memo, and you can find this and read it on the internet, telling the editors, publishers, and journalists that it owns, and it owns thousands, to start using the term conspiracy theorist and start calling people who were thinking critically about the JFK assassination conspiracy theorists. The reason they put this out in 1967 was that Jim Garrison, the district attorney of New Orleans, Louisiana, was starting to prosecute some of the people who killed President Kennedy. And so certain people in high places were panicked. And one of the ways they reacted was by putting out this memo to try to discredit critical thinkers as so-called conspiracy theorists. And they've been using that trick ever since.
Now, you mentioned something like Operation Mohawk, was it called?
Mockingbird.
Operation Mockingbird. These are things that you can go look into, and they're actually things that were put together. They actually exist. It's not something you just, because you hear this term, you know, mm-hmm. Mockingbird, you hear it, but this is mm-hmm. actually something that you can research and is out there.
Operation Mockingbird was maybe the most successful CIA operation of all time, according to an internal agency assessment. They gave the highest medal to the man who had done it, a guy named Cord Meyer. And there's a whole angle with the JFK assassination there that I won't get into. But yeah, Operation Mockingbird is undisputedly real. And there's nobody out there saying it didn't happen. And our biggest investigative journalists have written about this. Carl Bernstein wrote an article about how the CIA owns much of the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a Muslim speaker out there. He's someone who's well known in America and worldwide. He was actually speaking. He recommended that all Muslims, there was a few events in history. And in one of his speeches, we can let you hear it. He was bringing these historical facts that came up. And this kind of ties in with, you know, just current day events. And then what we'll get to this story with this Osama bin Laden's niece, who now is getting the spotlight, getting her 15 minutes of fame. But let me show you this real quick, and then if you can talk about these events that this person is, his name is Yasser Qadri.
Look up the Dreyfus Affair. Look it up, Dreyfus, where a person of a high position who was of a Jewish background was accused of betraying the country. It turns out that they planted false evidence. It turns out it was a false flag operation.
Tell us about this mm-hmm. event that he's talking about.
He's talking about the Dreyfus Affair. There was a Jewish army officer named Dreyfus who was blamed for espionage on behalf of Germany. This was during the late 19th century when France and Germany were at odds. And it turned out that I believe the guy who was actually guilty of espionage helped frame him. And so there was a big scandal at that time. There was a lot of prejudice against Jews. I won't call it anti-Semitism because European Jews are not Semitic. Anti-Semitism is prejudice against Semitic people, which today is mostly Arabs and Muslims. But in any case, the Dreyfus Affair was a huge scandal in that for more than a decade, there was a fight about whether this guy was guilty or not. He was actually sent off to Devil's Island, this horrific prison. And finally, the forces, people like Emile Zola, the famous novelist, and others who were fighting for to vindicate him, finally succeeded, that he was vindicated and the culprit was found. But this was a huge scandal at the time, and it showed that people had rushed to judgment that the authorities in France were willing to blame a totally innocent man just to make things convenient for themselves. And it would have worked if it hadn't been for the heroism of a number of people like Zola. And there are many other similar cases like this in history, Eddie.
Go ahead, finish. I'm going to get you the other one, before you mention it. Here, this is the other one that this Muslim scholar, he talks about, that everybody should go back, look into, and know about.
But there is two incidents, again, the Dreyfus, look it up, and the other one, please look this up. It is called the Reichstag fire, R-E-I-C-H-S-T-A-G, the Reichstag fire. This incident in 1933, every Muslim needs to be aware of it. And it is something that is truly shocking to hear. The German parliament was bombed. The parliament was bombed. A fire was set up. Hitler immediately said the Jews did it, instantaneously. The public ran with it. The perception was that this is a Jewish plot. And because of this one incident of bombing the parliament, Hitler asked and was given unilateral powers, like what happened 20 years ago in our own country because of one terrorist attack.
You heard what he said. That was Yasser Qadri. He said every Muslim needs to know about these things.
Absolutely, yeah. The Reichstag fire was the emergency that allowed Hitler to assume dictatorial powers. And the deal was the German parliament, the Reichstag, was burned ostensibly by some mentally retarded guy named van der Lubbe. But very likely the Nazis did it themselves. But in any case, they used that pretext to seize absolute power. And there's a parallel here, Eddie, not only with 9/11.
Okay, so now you see where I'm going. Yeah. You see what we're trying to do. We talked about this term that's thrown out, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so we talked about who you are. I mean, first, we're beginning an American patriot, somebody who's born here. You weren't even Muslim at the time. You were just teaching your students' critical thinking skill. You were questioning the official narrative. It led you down a path to investigate, became a scholar in this area now. And then we brought up the point of a Muslim scholar here, this Yasser Qadri, who talks about these events. Even before that, you mentioned, because this is these are actual events that happen, but now for you even to look into this, if you're scared because someone's going to throw a label at you, a conspiracy theorist, and you get spooked, and now you just believe all the official narratives. But he confirmed it. This is down, if you go down history, you can see that these are facts that happen. But now we go back to what this lady, now we can come into this event that they're trying to, again, start to create this panic, this fear of Muslims, right, through this event, this tragic event of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So now if you look back and you see how this was definitely what he said in his words, a false flag. Now you have things that are happening like they can't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. What were you?
Sure. Well, yeah, 9/11 and also the anthrax attacks, which were part of the same operation, that together was really a kind of American Reichstag fire, mm-hmm. because it allowed the federal government to push through emergency powers in the form of the Patriot Act. And it wasn't just 9/11 itself. That is the attacks on the Pentagon and the entire World Trade Center, where every World Trade Center building was destroyed with bombs, and none of the non-World Trade Center buildings right next to them were totaled, and the Pentagon was bombed. But then, after people were stampeded into this state of paralysis and fear based on that, in the beginning of October, these anthrax letters became known, and they stampeded through the American version of the Enabling Acts, which was the Patriot Act, by sending anthrax to the two Democratic senators who were trying to block the Patriot Act and were interested in investigating 9/11. Their names were Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, and they received anthrax in envelopes, and scribbled on the envelopes were the words, "Death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great." So it was supposedly another attack by crazy Muslims, and that shut down Congress, just like the Reichstag fire did in Germany. And once Congress was shut down, then when they reopened, they just went ahead and rubber-stamped the Patriot Act. So there's a very close parallel there. The difference is that that time, no single dictatorial figure emerged to become a permanent American dictator. George W. Bush would have been a pretty pathetic excuse for a dictator. Trump, on the other hand, he would be... perhaps more able to do that due to his charisma and this kind of hold he has over his followers.
So that brings us into now this emerging of Osama bin Laden's niece now, mm-hmm. right? So she's been plastered on much of the mainstream media now, or some of these outlets now. She's done some interviews. This one from Valuetainment is the one we're going to just go ahead and have you react to some of the things that she's saying. And I've watched some of these interviews that Patrick's had from Valuetainment. I mean, he's a good, solid interviewer, has a good solid program here, but I'm just surprised now because much of the fake news out there, they see it as fake news, but they conveniently accept the fake news when it comes to Islam, right? So that's the hypocrisy we see here. But let's get into this and see what your thoughts. This is her and him.
Censorship here in a minute. So let's go to 9/11. You're 14 years old. The event takes place. It happens. You know, you're watching the news and names come up. Osama bin Laden. Your last name is bin Laden. What are you thinking in that moment? What's your mother's reaction? What are your two older sisters' reaction when you see that event taking place?
So before all of that happens, and we haven't touched upon this yet, but people, or I mean, your viewers don't know this, but I am a total patriot at heart. Like, America after Switzerland is my second home. The love for America was passed on to me by my mother, who really valued what the country was built on. And she started taking me to the US 2 to 3 times a year from the age of 3, whenever I'd have school holidays. So by the time I reached 14 years old, America was my second home. So much so that, you know, 2 years before 9/11, I had gotten a US flag on holiday in South Carolina, and it was, you know, on my wall in my room. And I would get teased so much in school.
What do you think this is? Again, I mean, it's the whole motto, never forget. And this keeps being brought up, you know. You heard the new motto that has been brought up, never forget Islam and Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11. Stop using us as the scapegoat. But it seems like, again, here we go again, the reemergence and the fear-mongering is being united. What do you think when you hear this topic again being brought up in this way with her now, all of a sudden?
Well, I could see, even, you know, back when I realized what 9/11 and anthrax really had been, I could see that it was going to keep on continuing as this propaganda thing for a very long period. And sure enough, I'd even discovered that one of the men who was most likely involved in scripting the entire 9/11 drama, because it was undoubtedly scripted in advance with the idea of creating the effect that it created. And one of the people who's suspected of being involved in that is a man named Dr. Philip Zelikow. He's a history teacher at University of Virginia, and he published an article in Foreign Affairs magazine in 1997 speculating on what would happen if there were a spectacular kind of Pearl Harbor-style attack on the United States, such as the destruction of the World Trade Center. And he, at the time, in 1997, said that what would happen is that it would divide time into a before and an after, and nobody would remember what things had been like before this catastrophic event. And he said that it would create a multi-generational effect, sort of like Pearl Harbor did. There were focus group studies that showed that Americans still hated Japanese people as late as the 1990s because of Pearl Harbor. So Zelikow studied that and said there would be a multi-generational hatred of Islam if the World Trade Center were destroyed in a terrorist attack. Basically, he didn't quite say it in those words, but it was close enough in that article he published in 1997 with John Deutsch called Imagining the Catastrophic Event. So this is this guy, Zelikow, who was then made the head of the 9/11 Commission, and he ran the 9/11 Commission completely. He had total control over the entire thing, and he scripted the entire report before the commission had even convened. In fact, he wrote the entire report in chapter outline before the commission had even convened to investigate the event. So the point being that this was designed to create this long-term effect and to keep on going for 100 years or more. It's going to keep pushing Western people like Noor bin Laden, Westernized people in her case, to hate Islam for generations to come.
It's interesting that her name, I mean, she paints herself, I mean, I love America. I'm you know, I love my country, right? We might not agree with some things that are perpetuated in the name of, you know, like drone attacks, killing innocent people in another world, like Muhammad Ali when he came out and he didn't refuse to go and to fight poor people in another country, killing poor people, right? He stood up and now he's a Muslim American hero. So again, what does that mean? It just put out there, she's painting, like she's got this flag, you know, she's in Switzerland, and just it's kind of like this, she's trying to appease to the emotions of people as if the American people are that credulous, you know, they're just that gullible. And to fall for these stories. I mean, if you look at her name, she looks as though now she couldn't because her mother's name was her mother's name is Carmen Dufour or something, right? We know in Arabic, I mean, if you look at Osama bin means the son of, right? Mm-hmm. So if you translate her Noor, the son of, why she could have just easily just taken her. She's not practicing. Doesn't seem like she's not a practicing Muslim. She hates like Islam. She could have easily, if she was that scared, you know, just took her mother's name or just Latin. I mean, it's not, she don't, why is she saying bin, the son of, you know? Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't add up. It just seems like this is all just set up, you know, for some nefarious agenda.
Well, that was my first reaction when I saw this. This, she seemed so kind of plastic and out of central casting that I wondered if Walt Disney had made her, you know, the way they make the Hall of Presidents. They'd created bin Laden's niece for us. But yeah, maybe she should change not only her last name, bin Laden, as you say, that means son of, so what does that mean? But Nur, of course, means light. It's the famous, Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard. God is the light of the heavens and the earth. Yeah. It's a beautiful name. Seriously, she's, you know, I think she must have been horribly traumatized by this, assuming she's real and she's not out of the Hall of Presidents, which I am willing to assume. She would have had a tough time when she was 14 years old. 9/11 happens, and she has this link to the alleged perpetrator or the fall guy or the patsy or what have you. And just like so many other Muslims, and not just Muslims, but, you know, Sikhs were getting shot and lynched because they looked sort of Muslim. So there was that hatred of Muslims that 9/11 was designed to create, and she was right there in the middle of that storm. And it must have really terrified her as a little kid. And so that must have traumatized her to the point that she reacted by waving her American flag. It's funny the way she said, I'm such an American patriot. After Switzerland, it's my first country. Well, you know, a lot of American patriots would say, after Switzerland? Well, yeah. And of course, that's almost as bad as after Israel. And of course, that's very common. After Israel, America is my first country. That's what about half of our government and most of the people that own our media and give most of our money to political campaigns. That's how what they would say if they were telling the truth. Yeah, I love America. It's my second favorite country after Israel. But in any case, she is, I think she's the walking wounded, you know, because I think she's real. I think she really is bin Laden's niece. And she reacted to this trauma by waving the American flag harder than everybody. You know, I'm more American than anybody. Really, I didn't do it. Please don't lynch me. And that's the way she's identified for her whole life. Mm-hmm. And now she's had this opportunity to come into the limelight waving that flag as hard as she can on behalf of Donald Trump, which it's actually, you know, it would be hilarious if it weren't so pathetic.
Now, I like Patrick, actually, from this Valuetainment. He brings on some good guests, you know, covers some good topics. But and I hope this reaches him and he can just reevaluate when it comes to now when people go out of their lane. I mean, he promotes reading books. I mean, read the Quran. I mean, for yourself, hook up with a Muslim. Have someone like you who's a scholar in this area of 9/11, of many of these things that they're bringing up. To bring on someone like you, right, to ascertain really for his audience what's fake and what's real, and it's sad that now there I don't see really any good behind this. It's just this fear mongering, right? So let me go ahead and share another clip here from this and get your reaction.
We just had the election, and I know you were on Tucker and a few different shows, and you expressed your support for Trump.
See over here, Osama bin Laden's niece says only Trump can prevent another 9/11. But what?
Time magazine just came out last week calling him president.
Okay, so see again, another, but doesn't your, like you mentioned, as another scholar, someone who's written extensively on this, can you elaborate? Doctor, he's a Christian who was searching for the truth. Doctor, was it David Ray Griffin?
Yes.
So he blows all that out of the water, this whole 9/11 being linked to Islam and Muslims.
Yes, David Ray Griffin is a professor. He's retired now. Who has written about 12 books on 9/11, starting with the New Pearl Harbor. And his work is totally indispensable if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of what happened, it didn't happen, and especially how...
What's his name again?
David Ray Griffin.
David Ray Griffin. So if Patrick or her or anybody who's sincerely looking for the truth in this matter, this is an academic. He's a Christian also. He's not Muslim. And there's a quote that he said that the evidence that, you know, has seems has been fabricated that's trying to link Islam to Muslims. You know that famous quote that he made?
You know, I don't remember that particular quote, but it's just stunning how much of the so-called evidence around 9/11 was obviously fabricated. You know, I won't get into all the details, but like the only reason that they pointed a finger at Mohammed Atta was that Atta had two magic suitcases that were magically discovered full of planted evidence that the cops knew was planted in the case of one of them. And I mean, I could go on about the planted evidence all day
long. Why don't
we
stick to something just simple? When somebody looks at this, many people don't know that one of those buildings, seven, nothing even hit it.
Right, yeah. If you want the simple version, the simple version of how you know that 9/11 was a false flag, just investigate the controlled demolition of Building 7. The official story is that Building 7 fell down at 5:23 in the afternoon due to some very minor office fires. That would be the first time in history, well, the third time because of the two towers, that a steel-framed high-rise office building has ever completely collapsed for any reason other than controlled demolition. But with Building 7, just look at it. It's obviously a demolition, as essentially everyone has admitted, even the go-to scientists who tried to come up with ways of imagining that the towers had not been blown up. You show them Building 7, and they basically shrug and throw up their hands. The only people upholding the official story about Building 7, which is that it just fell down from office fires, those people are basically on the government payroll.
So people say, okay, Eddie, like, why are you talking about this topic? I mean, these topics are being brought up, and they keep, we have to go to the root of the matter, because they keep, again, using Islam and Muslims as a scapegoat. We know that Islam condemns something like this. I mean, you don't have a justification, but they're trying to, you know, show otherwise. But then when you have the whole event is questionable, right? Then and if somebody looks into it, and that's why we brought someone like yourself, an academic, a scholar in this area, who can also, who's pointed to other academics and investigators and people. You have like 3,000 plus, almost 4,000 architects and engineers. Richard Gage, I believe, is his name. Someone like him who gives a presentation and asks hundreds of people in the room, how many of you believe this at the start? But after he presents the evidence, all hands are down, you know? So what do you think?
Well, yeah, the one thing about 9/11 that everybody can figure out pretty quickly if they look into it is that the World Trade Center was demolished with explosives. It didn't just magically disappear, you know, in these gigantic explosions because it had been hit by planes with a little bit of kerosene or jet fuel enough. The official story is, of course, that kerosene in the planes started office fires, and the office fires destroyed the buildings. But once you look at this beginning with Building 7, you'll quickly figure out that obviously these buildings were destroyed with some very, very powerful explosives. Precisely how that was done is still being debated. But once
we don't have to get into that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's not for us to figure. That's when you start, you know, someone labels you that name, conspiracy theorist. You're trying to theorize, put it together. That's not our business. Okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. How it happened, when it I mean, how it happened, this, that, and the other. Okay, oh, maybe at the end, only God Almighty Allah, at the end, maybe in Jannah, you can go ahead and watch it in 4K or whatever.
But see, the what this means, though, is that they had rigged up these huge buildings for demolition ahead of time, in advance. These even Building 7, which was only 47 stories, and the two towers were all, like 110 stories. So even Building 7 at 47 stories was the tallest building ever taken down in a controlled demolition at that time. So these were huge, complex jobs, very, very difficult, and they had to have been rigged up in advance. And so what that means is that when they blame supposed Muslim hijackers, and we have every reason to know that there were no Muslim hijackers that day, but even just how would they have trusted people to hit these targets and somehow you know, create the pretext for blowing them up? So they would not have allowed people to just randomly hijack planes and fly them into buildings to provide that pretext. Instead, they would have used remote control or some means to make sure that there was a plane crash, that then they could blame the demolitions on that. That means there were no Muslims on the planes. And there's all kinds of evidence to show that these 19 guys that they blamed for this were not on those planes at all. And that most likely the best hypothesis is probably there were planes flown by remote control.
But what about the 300K study from Alaska University, is it?
Yeah, that's Leroy Halsey is the professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, who has put out the definitive final scientific word on Building 7. And it's kind of belaboring the obvious. It's very obvious to anybody with basic sort of grade school or maybe middle school physics that this building, Building 7, couldn't possibly just come straight down at almost free fall acceleration because of some office fires. Because to have it come down like that straight into its footprint at free fall, you would have to remove all of the vertical supports exactly at the same moment. You know, if you got most of them, but not a couple of them, boom, it's going to topple. You know, a big, tall building like that, it always wants to topple like a tree. You know, you can't take a tree and turn a tree into a little pile of sawdust on the stump very easily. And so that's why they pay controlled demolition firms so much to bring them straight down. So everybody looks at Building 7 can see that it was a demolition. However, if you want to get into the nitty gritty of absolutely proving it beyond any possible doubt and showing why the government's explanation is as insane as it is, you can do what Professor Halsey did and do a really complex computer modeling study. And so that's available for anybody who wants to really get into the engineering details.
How do you advise people who know they don't believe the official narrative, and that's all someone is saying? Like, oh, there's things that are questionable, like things right in front of your eyes. This wasn't like a Houdini or a magician trick, you know, that, or was it? I mean, that this building just fell down, nothing hit it. But someone, when you're talking to people and you're explaining, you know, what Islam is, you know, submission to the creator, not the creation, you know, Jesus practiced it, Moses, Abraham, it's a way of connecting with your creator, the one and only. And you go into the beautiful tenets of it, but then in the back of someone's mind, or someone even comes out and says, but you guys are the guys, right? Your religion is because of Muslims that now, again, it's always there. And now it's being revisited again with this scripted play that seems like it's coming up. So for someone who's a novice in this area, what do you, and then usually the arguments are, look, which is fact that Islam doesn't condone this, it condemns it, right? And they weren't Muslims who did it, right? But somehow they, you know, it was Muslims, but they weren't practicing Islam. And then you get into all this, but when you get to the root of the matter, Islam and Muslims had nothing to do with it. So what advice would you give to someone where you don't, because people are scared to come off like and get labeled a conspiracy theorist?
Well, if you can, if you have the time to do some reading and look into it, and then you can, you know, learn some of the facts about it, just telling people about those facts, I guess, is about the best you can do. Because it's, you know, it's not, unfortunately, the problem is that a traumatic event like this, and this Noor bin Laden is a classic example of somebody who's been traumatized into becoming very defensive and being very rigid in a particular approach. You know, so she's waving her American flag and you know, screaming against Islam. But she's just an extreme example because about half the American people were given pre-traumatic stress disorder by the TV images they saw on 9/11. And this is an example of what the professionals in this field, the word professional is a little dubious here, they would call this traumatic mind control or you know, using trauma to brainwash people. When people are traumatized, they become sort of desperate and they don't have anything to grab onto. And so then the person who's trying to brainwash them can basically tell them anything, and the person will internalize it at a very deep and often unconscious level. So there are so many people walking around today with this hatred or sort of negative feeling and fear of Islam that's been implanted deep in their subconscious mind by this 9/11 operation, which was designed precisely to do that. And we have to find ways to disarm them. And there are all sorts of ways you can sort of deprogram and disarm people. I think humor is helpful sometimes. I've been doing this kind of work, educating people about these kinds of very frightening things for 15 years now. And I think a little bit of humor can be helpful. I mean, not tasteless humor, but just lightening up a little bit so we can get some distance and rethink our kind of basic reactions to things.
Like if you had this Muslim scholar who, Yasser Qadhi, who brought up this event in history that happened where Hitler, he ended up starting the fire, bombing his own parliament, was it?
Yeah, setting fire to the Reichstag, which was the parliament, yeah.
So why is it hard to believe now? Why is it like far-fetched that the same thing happens in modern day?
Right, well, false flag operations are very common. And in 2001, nobody had heard of them except for people in military academies where they are taught as part of the curriculum. false flag operations are, they're very common. That happened throughout history. The expression comes from when a naval ship would hoist the flag that wasn't its own flag to try to, you know, attack somebody and get somebody else blamed for it. And to this day, criminals, serious criminals, organized crime types, will often find a patsy who will be blamed for their crime because they know that most police just want to solve the crime. And so you throw the patsy to the police, and the patsy gets blamed and perhaps convicted or maybe silenced before he can be tried, and then the case goes away. So framing people, setting people up for things they didn't do, tricking countries into thinking they've been attacked by somebody to start a war. I mean, this is old hat. And, you know, just let me give you a couple of examples. Israel is a specialist at this. In 1954, they attacked the United States, attacked American and British targets in Egypt. This was called the Lavon Affair. And
people can look this up.
Yeah, yeah.
What's it called?
Lavon Affair, L-A-V-O-N. Okay. And for many decades, Israel insisted that, no, this was just an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, and the Egyptians who convicted these Israeli terrorists had convicted innocent people. But then, I think about 15 or 20 years ago, the Israeli government finally admitted that, yes, we did it, and then they gave medals to everybody who was involved. Then in 1967, another even bigger Israeli false flag was the attack on the USS Liberty spy ship. This was during the 1967 war. And the Israelis attacked it all out, trying to murder more than 300 American sailors on this unarmed spy ship. They repeatedly returned to strafe the lifeboats. They tried to sink it. And only by Allah's grace was that ship saved. 34 American sailors ended up dead and hundreds wounded. Almost everybody on the ship was wounded. But then afterwards, the U.S. and Israeli governments hushed it up. The reason was that it was a false flag. It was supposed to be blamed on Egypt. They were going to kill 300 American sailors, and then the Americans were going to say, Egypt did this, and then America was going to jump into the war and bomb Russian bases in Egypt, which might have started World War III. So that's just, you know, and there are hundreds of examples of these false flag operations. So people need to educate themselves. If people had actually known about these things before 9/11, they probably couldn't have done 9/11. And not only those 3,000 people would still be alive, but many millions around the world who've been murdered in wars that were triggered by 9/11 would also still be alive.
Which you had many Muslims actually also who died in 9/11.
Yes, there were Muslims who died in the towers. There were people from all sorts of countries. The luckiest country was Israel, which had a huge presence in the towers, but they all moved out a week before. Zim Shipping Lines, which is co-owned by the government of Israel and the Rothschilds, broke its lease, losing a huge amount of money to move out 1 week before 9/11. And then Odigo Instant Messaging System sent out a warning in Hebrew that morning, warning people to stay away from downtown Manhattan. So the Israelis only lost a couple of people. But countries, I forget which countries, but if you look, you can look at the list, all sorts of countries lost double figures worth of people, including Muslim countries, and there were Muslim Americans who died as well.
What happened to the janitor? Was he called the last man out? He was someone who actually ended up accepting Islam. He wasn't Muslim. He helped actually everybody. He had like the key for the utility rooms. What was his name?
That's William Rodriguez.
Yeah.
He was the last man out of the North Tower.
And last man out.
Dived
yeah.
under a truck as the whole building came down.
Whatever happened to him?
Well, last I heard, he's alive and well and a family man in New York. He spent yeah. many years on the lecture circuit. He was a national hero for saving people. You know, he helped the fire department save a lot of people before he got out.
Yeah.
And so he was a national hero. He met Bush and so on. And then he kept trying to give his information to the authorities, and he actually did testify before the 9/11 Commission. And he testified that huge explosions had badly injured people and done tremendous damage to the lobby and the lower levels of the towers before the plane hit. And and then huge explosions were going off after that in the towers as well, as he was helping the fire department save people. So anyway, he wanted to testify about this, but unfortunately, the 9/11 Commission sealed his testimony, top secret, it's never been seen, and that showed him that there was something really wrong. And so since then, you know, he began doing lectures. He did a lot of lectures for several years. And now I think he's retired from the lecture circuit, and I'm not quite sure what he's up to.
Isn't that interesting? He was getting all the mainstream media attention when they were using him to kind of go with the narrative. But as soon as he came out with the truth and the reality of what happened, that went opposite to that, he got silenced. And then he had everything to do. He could have went along with that ride, and he could have made more money, right? Mm-hmm. but he went the opposite.
Right. Yeah. He became an unusual kind of 9/11 hero. Uh-huh. But I think it, you know, he's really a very admirable guy, and it was amazing. It was by the grace of Allah that this guy, a good-looking, articulate janitor, happened to be there with the only key to lead the firemen up and to open up the stairways and get people out. Mm-hmm. And then to survive it, it's just a quite a miracle.
What do you say when people, they talk about how insensitive someone is being because of the family members to even talk like this?
Well, the family members I know, people like Bob McElvain, who lost his son Bobby in the North Tower.
You know some actual family members?
Of course, yeah? Sure. I've been working with them for more than 10 years.
You've been working with the family members of 9/11, yeah?
The family members of 9/11 know a lot of them, really, you know that the official story is false. Bob McElvain, and it's really sad to hear him say this, he's come on my radio show several times, and he investigated very closely to find out what happened to his son. And he knows his son was killed by blunt force trauma from explosions. His son was there in the lobby before the plane hit. And those same explosions that Willie Rodriguez talked about presumably killed him. And so Bob knows that, and he's been trying to get justice for his son for 15 years now. And he and many other family members of the victims are behind the various lawyers committee for 9/11 justice, and the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth lawsuits. There are a number of lawsuits going on. And then there's Matt Campbell and Jeff Campbell, I think. I think Matt Campbell was the one who died, and his brother Jeff over in the UK is pursuing justice in the UK. He's got a court action in the UK about this. So there are lots of family members who've been working for justice on this. Ellen Mariani was another one who sued Bush and Cheney for killing her husband, who was on one of the flights. Long history of activism. The film 9/11 Press for Truth was made by the Jersey Girls, the most famous of these victims' family activists. So it's an insult to these victims, survivors, to say that they shouldn't be allowed to find out why their loved ones really died and who did it.
I've also heard that there was more people who were calling in. They were calling in and investigating, like calling mosques. Many people were also buying up more Qurans than ever after that, I heard, because they wanted to know, like, people who were out genuine, they wanted to see, like, does Islam really teach this? Even though we dismantled everything with these facts out there, but people who wanted to know, like, okay, what is Islam all about? And during those times that people were reading the Quran, and they were saying, hold on, they were going to the source. So why don't these people, like Patrick, we sincerely ask him to get a good translation of the Quran, read it for her also, read the Quran for yourself. Mm-hmm. Seems like they conveniently just, you know, don't want to do that. Why is that? And then you had people who were doing that, and they were actually accepting Islam. You had more people accepting Islam actually after 9/11.
Yeah, it's by the grace of Allah, some people approach things with an open mind and look into Islam, and others don't. Looking at Patrick and Noor in this conversation, I found this conversation kind of painful. And I think that maybe part of the reason for that is that both of those two people are in pain. And, you know, they clearly were in pain when they were talking about their parents' divorces. I mean, both of these people have experienced trauma. In both cases, their parents divorced when they were kids, and it left left a trauma for them. And you can see that on their faces when they talk about that. And of course, Noor bin Laden talked about the trauma of being a kid when 9/11 happened and kind of getting blamed for it. So these people, I think, are kind of in pain. And Patrick comes from a family that fled Iran during the Islamic Revolution. And so apparently his family was on the other side, the anti-Islam side, during the revolution. And so his family are exiled from the Islamic Republic of Iran. And that pain of exile probably came to him at least secondhand. And so I think these people have become kind of rigid in their approach to things as a way to defeat this pain that they're suffering from. And how to heal them, you know, maybe the Quran actually could help heal them. I don't think there's anything as healing as Salat prayer and as reading Quran. If you get to the point where you can read and recite Quran, which alhamdulillah, I've been able to do that now for a couple of years. I'm following Sheikh Imran Hossein's method of doing a full Quran recitation. You read it aloud every day and in 1 month you finish it. And he has a whole method. People can go to Imran Hossein's website to learn how to do that. it's very, very healing. You know, it's, for me, it's been very painful actually having to deal with the reality of 9/11, which is even uglier and more terrifying than the official version. And then that's led me into having to look at many other things that most people would rather not look at, things like trauma-based mind control. You know, 9/11 was one example of trauma-based mind control, but, you know, look up Project Monarch, look up MK Ultra. There are criminals and intelligence agents who intentionally traumatize people in order to control their minds. This is just, you know, one of the kinds of subjects I've ended up studying after I was forced out of the academy for looking into 9/11. And so I think that the healing power of Islam and Islamic practice in particular, the actual ritual practice of letting go of everything, surrendering completely to God as you put your forehead on the floor, it's the highest form of, call it meditation, call it thanking God or praise or prayer, whatever you want to call it. Salat is an amazing thing with this great healing power. And so I pray that people like this who've suffered from these various kinds of pains and traumas in their lives that have led them to hate and to reject and to push away their real heritage and their real relationship with God. You know, God's waiting for them. And so all they really need to do to really heal is to stop, you know, stop hating on Islam and waving your flag extra hard and yelling that you're, you know, in favor of Trump or whatever, and just let go and face the truth, al-Haq, which is another name for God in our tradition. I mean, these people really could be healed by Islam. Whether that happens or not, I guess Allah and they are, you know, the ones who determine that.
If they can get past all the fake news that's out there and the misinformation, and we'll end off with this. There's one more thing that from the clip.
I can't stand the veil, you know, and then you have here in the West, you know, Mattel coming out with the veiled Barbie and Nike coming out with the hijab with a swoosh and knowing, you know, what's happening in the Middle East and these women who are being persecuted. It's just,
we'll finish it off from there. You can see just she's boiling, like mm-hmm. her body language says it all. And then she has a letter to America, and in part of it she talks about some things that if she would look into, if Patrick would look into Islam, I mean, you articulated, you know, the healing effect of the Quran, and then if they looked at and put it to the test who the Quran actually came from, like it's from the creator of the heavens and earth, the creator that created you. And then she talks about the veil now. And if she, I believe it comes off as she's Christian, I believe.
The Bible says,
in like manner also.
In like manner also.
That women adorn themselves in modest apparel.
What is so modest about this?
Because she mentioned it in her letter. But you have Jesus, the mother Mary, who's wearing the hijab. So she's talking about this, about modesty, and she's talking about the degeneracy of the moral, of the breakdown of the family. But this is all what Islam comes to preserve: the family, modesty, morality, worship of one and only God, the same God of Jesus, Moses, Abraham, the last and final measure of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him all. So it's like kind of, you know, these double standards and hypocrisy. Like this is everything that she's talking about family, about, you know, morality, all these. This is the essence of Islam, about building a society based on justice, of good character, manners, you know. Mm-hmm. So when you hear that, and then she's, and then the whole thing about hating the veil, but mm-hmm. Jesus' mother, she wore the veil, mm-hmm. the hijab.
Yeah, well, you know, she experienced the painful, you know, divorce of her parents when her father was Saudi and Muslim, and her mother was Swiss and apparently non-Muslim. And I think that really hurt her. And of course, when you're a kid, you're going to identify with the parent that's taking care of you. You know, you have to almost. So I think she identified with that, you know, non or anti-Muslim side of her own family split. And so why does she hate the veil so much and mischaracterize it as something that women are forced to do, when in fact, in reality, for the most part, hijab is a voluntary choice that women make to express their spirituality and their purity. It's a kind of a symbol that I'm a spiritual and pure being. You know, don't put your desiring eyes on me. you would think the feminists would actually like that, but mm-hmm. for some reason they seem to prefer it the other way. But then the irony here is that that family breakdown that she experienced and that Patrick experienced and that so many kids from this generation are experiencing, this comes from the breakdown of the kind of morality that Islam is there to preserve. And so it's really the solution for these problems, and these two people would be experiencing a lot less pain if they had grown up in a genuinely pious kind of Islamic milieu. So I just wonder how many people in this generation, these young people like this, who grow up kind of, you know, hating and into identity politics and decadence and depravity or whatever they're into, and it leads nowhere, are someday going to get out of the dhulumat and back towards the nur, out of the mm-hmm. darkness back towards the light. And Noor here, she's a candidate for that. And so is Patrick. You know, they both came from Muslim backgrounds. Now they're self-hating Muslims, right? You know, there's a joke about the self-hating Jews. Oh, if you don't like Israel, you must be a self-hating Jew. Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but these two are definitely self-hating Muslims. They hate the Muslim side of themselves, and they've been trained to, and they've been brainwashed to hate the Muslim side of themselves. But by 9/11, by the particulars of their divorce, where the non-Muslim parent gets custody, and hate that darn Muslim dad of mine, and you know, it's very, very sad. But there is that solution still there. If people get back to that traditional God-based morality, where there's actually a divine reason to be moral. If you're an atheist, there's no reason why it's better to be moral than immoral, really, right? It's all, the world's a random accident. If you're pious and you know that God actually is watching and you're going to be judged, and you can feel that presence of Allah and the angels around you, you have the best of reasons to be moral and virtuous. And when people are moral and virtuous, their families don't break up and this kind of pain doesn't happen.
Yeah. So wrapping up here, one more thing. I hate when they mention this. You caught it in the interview, the term kafir, right?
Yeah, they pronounce it kafir.
Yeah, that's kafir is the milk, actually, the probiotic milk that you drink, right?
Yeah. Well, obviously, Noor bin Laden doesn't speak any Arabic. Yeah, she said, you're familiar with the term kafir, like, and accentuating the word fear in the second syllable was quite telling. But yeah, she obviously knows nothing about Islam. She hates on it so much that she hasn't bothered to learn about it.
But this term that was coined because they try to translate that as infidel, which this is wrong, because kafir means to cover up the truth.
Yeah, ungrateful truth concealer would be
but,
a better.
But this infidel was coined by the Christian crusaders.
Right, yeah, that's the word infidel. That's an English word that the crusaders use. So they're projecting onto the Muslims their own feelings.
Mm-hmm. And then I sincerely, humbly advise Patrick. He's read so many books. Read a good translation of the Quran. There's a clearquran.com. You have Sahih International. I don't know if you, one particular you think is good. Same thing for her. Meet, go, visit a mosque, ask your questions, come to the source. You know, come and sit with Muslims, and instead of creating this anxiety and fear in people, which is not going to create peace in the world, you're just helping to create more problems. So you said it beautifully. The Quran is a healing effect. Read it, right? Mm-hmm. And then what would you advise for Muslims out there who have kind of gone away, because God Almighty Allah tells us, if a fasik, if a evildoer, someone comes to you with this, verify, check it up, right? So we see the community is home. And even many Muslim scholars, I mean, how would you advise critical thinking, especially in this day and age?
Yes, that famous verse from the Quran is sometimes translated as ascertain the truth. Yeah. If the fasiq comes to you with alarming news, ascertain the truth, or you might regret what you did, you know, if you react the wrong way. And I think as Muslims, we should be regretting the fact that when the fasiq media and the fasiq government came to us with this alarming news about, oh, the Muslims just blew up the World Trade Center with a couple of planes, we should have ascertained the truth before we went along with it. But mm-hmm. most of us just sort of went along with it. We should be aware that we're living in a society that is, it's not an open, free democracy with a free media. We're living in a controlled corporatocracy or a plutocracy ruled by the rich. They run the media. What you're getting in the mainstream media is not anything even remotely close to the real overall, you know, accurate reflection of what's really going on in the world. It's propaganda, just like in the old Soviet Union. What we're getting here is really no more accurate than what the citizens of the old Soviet Union got. They needed to get mimeographs to get the truth. And today we need alternative media websites to get the truth. So Muslims need to get on this, because we are we're facing a Dajjal of lies coming at us. And maybe we are in the end times, the Akhir Zaman. Maybe it is the time of Dajjal. I don't know. But we're certainly overwhelmed by lies from official sources. And the people of the lie are opposed. You know, they hate the people of the truth. And I think they recognize that that real Muslims, people who are genuinely, faithfully practicing Islam, are people of the truth, and it's a threat to their agenda. And you know, we want to get into the threat to the bankers' agenda of our opposition to usury as Muslims. There are so many reasons that Islam is a problem for these very powerful psychopaths who rule the world, and we need to be aware of that. And when these fascists come to us with alarming news, we should ascertain the truth.
This is part of our deen.
It is.
Yeah. So beautifully, thank you so much, Dr. Kevin, for being with us and sharing your thoughts with us on this new emergence of the new person that's been propped up to create some hysteria and reunite. So we kind of dismantle that. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your great work, Eddie.
Where people can, if they want to find you, more of you?
My website is truthjihad.com. And I also write for Crescent International, which is the best current affairs Muslim news magazine.
Jazakallah, thank you so much. May God Almighty Allah bless you, reward you.
Thank you, Eddie. Allah Ibarak Fik.
And if you like this episode of The Deen Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Subscribe right now.